Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We could leave any day, call for help. We were guides, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk.
John and Lance had Josh Pate on earlier today, host of the Josh Pate College Football Show, part of CBS Sports. He won't be going to Georgia, Alabama, Texas, Georgia, which was a surprise to them. I kind of knew that he might pick a different SEC game. He is going to Tennessee, Alabama. Tennessee coming off a tough win at home against the Florida Gators, where Graham Mertz got hurt in that one, and people are blaming Morgan Wallen for that. Morgan Wallen, Tennessee guy, had a couple concerts that ripped up the surface, so they had to put in new grass the week of. It rained, and they credited the rain with making the grass more solid, and Graham Mertz had a non-contact injury for his knee that's putting him out for the year, and Morgan Wallen's getting the blame. I've never heard a Morgan Wallen song, but I'm fine blaming the country star for what happened to Graham Mertz. The Gators were up 10-0 in that one. He had just thrown a touchdown pass on the play, and he was kind of backing away from some of the chaos around his feet, and the knee buckled, and he's done. And that Knoxville turf jumped up and grabbed him. Thank you, Morgan Wallen, for ending Graham Mertz's career. And that's a sarcastic thank you. We got to get these country singers out of here, Sean. If I got a college football game that week, can you do your show someplace else? He's very popular. Understood. I've never heard a song, but I know he's very popular. I don't need you on my field the week before a game.
Yeah, there's what, 6-7 weeks that we need this field?
Yeah, why do we need Morgan Wallen?
The other 49, you can have them.
I know you don't want to do a show outside in December. Show up in July. It's hot. Just show up. Who cares?
I'm sure. I've literally never been to the state of Tennessee. I'm sure it's nice in March, April.
Something. Why do you have to do a concert, a two-night concert in Knoxville on the Neyland Stadium field? Well, we got a game against Florida coming up. Don't ruin my field. I think a Tennessee player was lost for the year because of a non-contact injury, too. So they're pointing at Morgan Wallen's concert as a reason why it happened. I don't know if any of that has any truth behind it, but I'm willing to believe it.
No.
Blame him.
I'm good with that. I don't care.
Yeah. Particularly since I don't know any of your music.
Doesn't hurt me at all.
Doesn't affect me to blame you for the fate of Graham Mertz.
We've had Astros players blame the batter's eye for 2 years. So as far as blaming things that probably aren't at fault, sure, whatever.
That field wasn't ready for a big-time SEC football game. Yeah. It should be ready this week as Bama travels to Tennessee for that one. And the stat I was going to bring up before I went to break, this is the first week where none of Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, Ohio State, or Michigan are ranked in the top three since November 9th, 2014. That was when Mississippi State and Dak Prescott was on their run. Jameis was still at Florida State, and Oregon had Marcus Mariota. Week 12 of the 2014 season.
Wow.
Was that the first year of the playoff?
That was.
Yes.
Because the first playoff ranking in like October or whatever, I think it was like Mississippi State, Alabama, Ole Miss were the top three.
The two Mississippi schools were in the top four.
Yeah.
And that certainly changed as the season went on. Ohio State beat Oregon in the national title game. So that's out there. Changes in college football. The big game still, at least a lot of the attention still is in the SEC. So Quinn Ewers will start again, obviously. I would say Texas needs him to get off to a better start. I don't think he'll get off to a Jalen Milroe-like start like Jalen Milroe did against Georgia.
Yeah.
It'd be great, but I don't think it's going to happen. But a better start would be nice. Don't throw a pick on the first possession. I think anything above that, we're cool. If you got a punt on three downs, it wouldn't make me feel great if I'm a Texas fan. You want to go out there and put some first downs together, get a drive going.
Go five and out.
Yeah, but better than a pick.
Yes. I'd be okay with something between how he started Red River and how Jalen Milroe started against Alabama. Something between throwing a pick and 28
straight touchdowns.
I'm not greedy. All right.
Yeah, let's get half.
Three straight touchdowns, I'll take.
Yeah, I mean, even half.
Two.
You want to start out and score in your first two drives? We'll take it. That's great.
Yeah. We're not Alabama. We're not going to blow a four touchdown lead.
Yeah, it is interesting to see how Kirby Smart and that Georgia team, who was lauded at least going into the Alabama game for how they handle these big game situations, responds to another one on the road. And we know Steve Sarkisian will have some stuff dialed up for them. And Kirby Smart, when he's not bullying opposing quarterbacks on the sideline,
I know
it's generally a good defensive mind.
Keep your head on a swivel.
Yeah. Hey, Quinn, maybe slide before you get to that sideline.
I mean,
Kirby's waiting for you.
I mean, if Kirby pushes him the way he pushed Van Buren,
that oblique is going to act up.
I mean,
maybe that's what you're looking for. Maybe Kirby puts a little hurt on him, and he goes, my side. And then Arch walks in as the conquering hero.
And what did Georgia struggle with the most when Alabama was on offense? The legs of Jalen Milroe.
And we won't ever say that about Quinn Ewers.
Who has legs on the Texas,
We'll say that about one Arch Manning. The perimeter runs. Let's see if Georgia, getting out on the perimeter, we'll see if Georgia's fixed that.
The Arch cat.
You don't even need Quinn to get hurt. Just bring Arch in for some specific plays in that first 15 and see what he does. Look, Alabama's fast. Certainly Texas is just as fast with their wide receiver core. Oh, Isaiah Bond, is he going to play?
They said on Monday they expect him to play.
Expect him to play. So, Bolden, Golden, Bond, they're just as fast as all the Alabama wide receivers. Throw a Wingo in there, too. It's not a step down as far as what Georgia has to face. Sure, there is Ryan Williams. I did think it was a little cap. Yeah, I said it. That they were pushing that, hey, if the depth at Texas wasn't as good as it was, then Ryan Wingo would be just as good as Jeremiah Smith and Ryan Williams.
I don't know about just as good.
Those
pretty good guys.
I would say if Wingo was as good as those guys, the depth at Texas wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it works.
You know
who's not lacking for wide receiver talent? Ohio State.
Yeah.
And somehow Jeremiah Smith shines because he's just that good.
Yeah.
I think Kirk said that. I was like, Kirk, if you don't get the F out of here,
like,
stop it.
Yes, Wingo would probably have a bigger role than a couple catches in a end around a game. That's about what he does. It's about like three catches.
And I'll be
50
fair to
yards.
Kirk. I think that was pushed to him by Sarkisian to hype up his guy. But Kirk, you got to see through the nonsense.
Gotta like, go, wait.
You're telling me if Sarkisian had a talent like Ryan Williams or Jeremiah Smith, he wouldn't put him on the field a lot.
Let me pull up Matthew Golden's numbers. Who's this guy blocking him from the field?
Yeah, weren't they just talk? In fact, in game, they were talking about Silas Bolden recovering that touchdown off the fumble. Was it from Blue?
I think it was Wisner.
From Wisner, as they were really waiting for him to step up and have a signature moment. This could be a signature moment. Okay, and that guy is keeping Wing off the field, but he's just as good as Williams or Smith? Cut it out.
I mean, there's even another young wide receiver that we haven't mentioned that plays not a way more, but plays
a little bit
more.
Moore?
Yeah, DeAndre Moore also plays more.
Insane that he tried to get that
DeAndre
off.
DeAndre Moore's like, that's an actual starter, third starter.
Don't try to convince us and push Sarkisian's stuff.
Yeah.
Texas has good wide receivers.
Ryan Wingo, also very good.
He is.
We don't need to lie about
it. You don't have to lie. We've seen how capable he is, but you ain't got to push that he's as good as those guys. If he was, we would know it because you don't keep that type of talent off the field. So that one's going on, of course, aforementioned Ryan Williams. He'll be in Neyland.
Careful on that turf, Ryan Williams.
It's been 2 weeks. We'll see if that turf is more solidified. Mm-hmm. I don't want to lose Ryan Williams to a Morgan Wallen-induced injury. I don't have much faith in Tennessee. I know it's a big environment, but they're passing offense against anyone with the pulse on defense, and Florida barely counted until we saw them against Tennessee. it looks a little suspect. Nico's not as good as what people thought, at least. And he's a freshman, so that doesn't mean that much. But when you talk about the NIL and how much it costs to get him and how much they thought he was going to improve them, he hasn't been that guy. When you're playing SEC-level athletes, just hasn't been the case. He's missing throws deep, and that's part of their offense. They want to test you deep, and he hasn't been able to hit those throws. Of course, could Saturday be the day? Alabama, we saw, has trouble, particularly in the second half against Georgia, covering guys down the field and making plays. It could be the day, but I need Nico Iamaliava to prove it before I'm all in on what he can be.
Can he do what Diego Pavia did? That's my challenge.
That is the standard right now. That guy beat Alabama, dicing them up. Not necessarily deep down the field, although that one throw fourth down was nice. Yeah. They went to fourth and one or something. He made a throw down the field, but they executed really well. I don't know if Tennessee has executed like that all year against anyone who isn't like the Mocs of Chattanooga, whoever they played earlier in the year.
They beat Kent State, too.
Oh, the Flashes.
Yeah.
Not so golden, were they? That wasn't great by me, but wow. I did it.
I can't believe we got a Kent State diss in here.
They don't deserve it.
Probably the most...
They didn't really deserve it.
Probably the most slander anyone caught this on the show.
No, that's true. They certainly didn't deserve it. Those are the two big SEC games this week. I'm trying to think of anything that pops up.
SEC. I know. Nothing else matters.
I wouldn't agree to that, but they are the prime games for people to pay attention to this weekend in college football. We had a big game in the Big Ten this past Saturday. That mattered more than anything that happened in the SEC. The Texas-Oklahoma game was a dud. No one thought that was going to be competitive, and rightfully so.
Oh, you got LSU-Arkansas. You got Texas A&M, Mississippi State.
You still keep mentioning SEC games, I noticed.
Auburn-Missouri.
So there are There are no other games going on, right?
Not that I can see.
Sean Mapes, SEC honk.
Who would have thought? I
would have thought as soon as you guys joined the SEC, I knew you guys would immediately turn into that.
Sorry, South Carolina versus OU.
No one's going to watch that game.
Oh, Kentucky-Florida? That's a good rivalry.
And I want to push back on this, but if you look at the schedule, there isn't a lot there. Michigan-Illinois, two ranked teams. Michigan shouldn't be... Well, okay. Michigan is pretty boring to watch offensively. I won't deny that. But that's the other ranked on ranked matchup this week beyond the two SEC games. So, yeah. The SEC deserves a focus this week, but we don't have to pretend like they're the only conference that plays football. The best game of the year was in Eugene. I don't care what happened. I don't care what happened in Tuscaloosa between Georgia and Alabama. The Eugene, Oregon, Ohio State game was competitive throughout. It wasn't a blowout from the minute the game started and then this momentous comeback.
I think that is part of the reason, I don't know, part of the reason the Georgia-Texas game is so weird, because I feel like I watched a Georgia game and I still don't know how good they are.
No.
Where you can play both sides of, well, they're down 28-0 immediately in that game. Or they did erase that deficit. They did come back from that. But I'm just not impressed with Carson Beck being able to move the ball finally when there's a 4-touchdown deficit. Like, they're in garbage time in, like, the third quarter.
Yeah.
And that's when they made their comeback. It's just – it's hard to know how much of that to take seriously, you know?
And 8 quarters since that game, Alabama's played like crap.
That too. That doesn't help.
Yeah, it doesn't help.
Much like Michigan playing like crap, and I already know OU is going to play like crap for the rest of the year. So two Texas marquee wins are already losing their luster. But, I mean, Alabama has, for a team that's only lost once, has really lost a lot of luster.
Yes, they very well could be a two-loss team because they lost in back-to-back weeks to Vanderbilt on the road. And that porous South Carolina team at home. But they survived. And they've got a big matchup against Tennessee here on Saturday. Okay, when we get back, we'll get into some other things beyond college football and the NFL. There are some questions regarding the Astros we can get to. Brian McTaggart wrote this article a couple days ago we haven't gotten to. And I won't say the Pochettino era hit a brick wall. But sometimes altitude can be a problem. And the Americans went into Guadalajara and caught one. And not a good one. We'll talk about that and a couple of other things when we come back.
The Del Olalea Show continues
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's your host, Del Olalea.
So the U.S. national team went into Mexico and took a beating. They're in Guadalajara, where Chivas plays. Lose that game 2-0. Raul Jimenez scored on the free kick. They said it was like the first direct free kick in that rivalry since like the late 90s. And then Mexico scored coming out of the break to make it 2-0. The game was pretty much over after that. Choppy field, but Mexico was the better team overall throughout. If you want to get into some context, Christian Pulisic was sent home. And by home, I mean Milan, to go back to his club team. Other guys have been injured. And a lot of guys who you may not even have ever heard of. And some guys I don't want to hear from ever again. Like Aiden Morris, it's on site with me and you. He is the new Michael Bradley for me. Not Michael Bradley, like the young one that everyone kind of liked. The late one, when people were saying, why is he still in the roster? It's only because his dad's here. And then he survived that too. Aiden Morris, not really ready to play even at the CONCACAF friendly level. He wasn't great against Panama. Poor first touch. Don't know how many passes he actually completed. That guy stuck out like a sore thumb. Like, I know you, Mike. I know you, Aiden Morris. You're just Michael Bradley with hair. It was a rough one for the national team. Mexico took control of that game once that goal was scored and never gave it back. It was some teammate-on-teammate crime in that one, too. Tim Ream, who is now playing in the MLS, formerly played at Fulham. His former teammate, Raul Jimenez, who I mentioned scored the free kick, took the ball off of him, led to a pass that led to a direct goal. That was the final straw as far as that game being competitive. So 2-0 to Mexico. They win by that famous scoreline that the U.S. has, 2-0. Mexico takes it in the friendly in Pochettino's second game.
They got their lick back.
Well, I mean, that scoreline's famous partly because we beat them in a second-round game in the World Cup. Round of 16 game in the World Cup. Oh. So, no, they didn't get their lick back because, in fact, the coach of the Mexico team in 2002 is the coach again for Mexico for, like, his third tenure with Mexico, Javier Aguirre. And he said that was the worst loss of his career, the 2002 round of 16 match to the U.S. in the World Cup. So, no, they didn't get their lick back, but a good performance by the Mexican national team, El Tri. They dominated U.S. squad that had they both played on Saturday, and the U.S. didn't adjust well, didn't adjust to the environment, and Mexico took control. But get out of my face, Aiden Morris. You're a young player. I'm sure you got bigger things ahead of you, but
go pro in something other than
no, he's already a pro. Oh, okay. It's too late for that. He plays for Middlesbrough over in England. But I can deal without you being in these type of matches going forward. If you want to, hey, Pochettino, I know you had he was looking at all the guys. I got to get a look. In fact, he talked about it. We only had 10 days with these guys. Just wanted to evaluate them. It was unfortunate that some guys had to go for different reasons, so on and so forth. All the things you say when you're a new coach in the job. I hope you've seen enough of Aiden Morris, though. The lights are too bright. That's all I'll say. Maybe Aiden Morris, it will become a stalwart for Pochettino going forward, but at least in the last couple matches, the lights were way too bright for that young man.
Pochettino fraud watch?
No.
Okay.
No.
Oh, just I had to ask. Sure. 1-1.
Sure. You won.
Everyone had a parade when they beat Panama.
You want to you?
Everyone was everywhere in America. People were honking their horns, celebrating when they. When they beat them on a Saturday night.
Sure. When college football was going on. Yeah, everyone in America was honking their horn. Sure, that's what was going on. I didn't even know the game was on until I happened to have the football game go to a break. So I started flipping around and, oh, that game's on. I'll watch this. And then eventually they scored a couple. So, yeah, 1-1 to start in this window.
Okay. Just don't let it happen again, poach.
Well, what? Don't be like all the other American coaches who lose to Mexico in Mexico.
Oh, in Mexico, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say what you want about Greg Berhalter. Built ass against Mexico.
There's a lot of Mexico final wins for Berhalter in Gold Cups and Nations Leagues. You're right about that. That's true.
But not in Mexico. That qualifier.
Yeah. Let me get to it.
I just wanted to, you know.
Understood.
Because I feel like we were unfair to Greg Berhalter.
You feel like that?
Yeah. So I wanted to, you know, before the phone lines all light up, just...
You're a Pochettino. You're a Greg Berhalter stan.
No. I'm just a fair USMNT supporter.
Understood.
And I want to show respect to the newest Chicago Fire head coach.
Manager? Yes, I believe that's where Greg Berhalter is now.
Yeah. Hopefully the Dynamo don't run into him in a big game. He's a big game coach.
He's a big CONCACAF game coach, sure. As far as actual big games?
Not too big of a game.
Yeah, it can't be too big.
He's a good, like, medium game coach. Upper medium.
To compare it to college football, he's a big Duke's Mayo Bowl type coach.
8-4.
Yeah, he's that type of coach.
Okay.
If you're the
Dave Doran, got it.
If you're the fourth or fifth place team in the ACC and the sixth place team in the SEC, he's that type of guy. Mm. He can go get you a win there. If you want to be Mac, if you want the current version of Mac Brown, Greg Berhalter's your guy.
I don't want the current version of Mac Brown. North Carolina, no disrespect.
North Carolina doesn't want the current version of Mac Brown. That thing feels like it's coming to an end pretty quickly. I don't think they'll fire Mac Brown in season. That doesn't seem like the thing they would do. But after the year, they may ask good old Mac to take a step down, and rightfully so. It's been bad. They have inexcusable losses. And the James Madison one may be the final straw, and they continue to lose after that. So McTaggart has an article as well. I did mention this before we went to break. Ryan McTaggart wrote an article a couple of days ago about the Astros' biggest questions going into the offseason, and they're fairly obvious. You know, the biggest one is, what are they going to do with Alex Bregman? We won't have an answer to that for at least a couple weeks. I'm sure it'll be somewhere after the baseball season ends, we'll get one. I don't even think it'll be something that happens immediately. Will they resign Alex Bregman? We've heard from McTaggart on this topic before. That's his first question. No, he doesn't think they will. He's gone on record on a baseball show that he did from his car. He was the guest and told the world that no, at least the baseball world, that no, they're not signing Alex Bregman because the contract he will want doesn't fit what the Astros do. I think that one will be the question that everyone wants an answer to, but I feel like we already have our answer. What happens at first? Who plays center field? Will the starting pitcher stay healthy? And should they resign Kikuchi or Verlander? Should they resign Kikuchi? Yes. Will they? I have my doubts. Unless Kikuchi gets wrapped under, well, he did that for the Astros, he won't do that anywhere else, then I think they have a shot. But are the Astros going to give a 30-plus-year-old pitcher the money that he would deserve coming off the year he had with them? Like, he's more valuable to the Astros than I think he is for anyone else. I don't know if any other major league team's going to think Kikuchi's going to take what he did here someplace else. If they did, then there's really no shot the Astros are getting him back. That price tag is going to be pretty high. That guy was one of the best pitchers in baseball while he was an Astro. So I'd like to have him back. Who plays at first? I'm less concerned about that. That's starting pitching. And can you bolster it by keeping a guy you made an acquisition for during the regular season? That's a question I want to answer to, because it wouldn't be a long-term deal. So would they be willing to send some of that Verlander money Kikuchi's way when there are so many questions regarding who will be pitching for them next year because of the health or lack thereof of their rotation? Bregman? Likely gone. Kikuchi, I hope he stays. I don't think Prize Picks let you bet on whether guys will return to their former teams, but they let you do a lot of other things.
Yes, a lot of other things, including the playoff baseball that's happening in a series. Normally, the Astros are playing them, but the Astros, it's been 20 years since they played in the series that's happening tonight. The NLCS. They have not played that in that since 2005. But the NLCS is going on. You got the Mets. You got the Dodgers. Well, the Mets Cinderella run continue? If you think it does, maybe you want to go on Prize Picks and take some mores on Pete Alonso's hits plus runs plus RBI. Maybe you want to take some lesses on the Dodgers pitchers or hitters. And a new thing that for the next week you can do is to go to the NBA tab and, hey, Anthony Edwards, what? What's that? Is this a mistake? More than half a point in the season opener against the Lakers on Tuesday. No, it's not a mistake. You get basically a free square if Anthony Edwards scores one, count them, one American point in the NBA tip-off game next week. Thank you to Prize Picks for doing that. If you want to get in on the action and make a little bit of money, you go to the Prize Picks app, use promo code MAPES, that's M-A-P-E-S, and get $50 instantly when you play $5. That's promo code MAPES to get $50 instantly when you play at least $5. You don't even need to win to get that money. It's guaranteed. Prize Picks, run your game.
The Del Olalea Show continues
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's your host, Del Olalea.
We love to close a plot hole on this show. Weeks ago, we discussed a quarterback who had a name too cool to ever play the position at Notre Dame. Deuce Knight was his name. Well, still his name. But he was the quarterback commit to Notre Dame until he decided, I want to play at Auburn. Now, we can question the young man's decision about when to play at Auburn. If you're asking Bo Wallace, hey, don't go play under Hugh Freeze. He doesn't care about you. At least, wow. At least when you leave the school. When you play for him, he loves you. But once he's done with you, he's done with you. But Deuce Knight made a decision. He wants to play at Auburn. That name, far too cool to play quarterback Notre Dame. Notre Dame has a new commitment that they stole from Clemson. And this kid has a name that fits Notre Dame. His name is Blake Herbert. And if Blake ain't a name that should be quarterbacking Notre Dame, I don't know what is. Certainly shouldn't be Deuce Knight. Now, obviously, if he has the same success that Herbert name did at Oregon, then great. Great for Notre Dame. But that's the way college football should be. The Deuce Knights of the world go play at Auburn. The Blake Herberts of the world maybe play at Notre Dame, but probably transfer while they go get another middling quarterback from the ACC to keep that streak alive. Four-star player. There is a bit of surprise that he decommitted from Clemson. Clemson doesn't generally lose quarterbacks like that. But he made his decision. He's going to go play at Notre Dame. And cool. He's from Canada. Even more of a fit. And Sean and I were talking about this yesterday. And unfortunately, it just broke down racial lines because we could not find a pocket passer, a dual threat quarterback who wound up in an NFL booth or college football booth. But if you think about all the quarterbacks who wind up as the analyst aside the play-by-play guy, they're all pocket passers except for RG3.
RG3 was the one.
But he doesn't have a job anymore.
No.
So he doesn't break the trend.
Break the mold.
Trent Green, pocket passer. Kurt Warner, pocket passer. Tom Brady, Tony Romo had a little bit of, he could move, but he wasn't a dual threat.
No.
He could move, though.
Improviser.
He was an improviser. Dan Fouts back in the day. Steve Young. Was he in the booth? Did he ever
he was a studio
guy. He was a studio guy. Okay. So that would have been the guy we could have leaned on, Steve Young. But even he didn't make it into the booth.
Brian Griese called Monday Night Football for a year with Lou Riddick.
Troy Aikman.
Tom Brady.
They're all pocket passers. And yes, I know what you think we're leaning into. We didn't want to. It just broke that way.
I think I brought it up. It's literally all pocket passers. There's not one guy who's like, when I used to run that ball, let me tell you, Jake Locker isn't out there being like, let me tell you about running that football.
Well, there is a certain level of success you have to make it into that booth. You can't be Jake Locker. Rich Gannon, I think, did games, and he had a bit of wiggle, but he wasn't he could scramble, but he wasn't put in positions where he was doing the design run thing. Yeah. He wasn't a lot of quarterback powers with Rich Gannon.
Has Archie Manning been on the Manning cast?
I think Archie Manning's been in the booth doing games.
Okay. There we go. There's a scrambler. I mean, it was for his life.
Yeah, but it wasn't designed. It was a man trying to survive and keep the Manning name alive. And look what the name has done since he survived those days at with the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah.
If you can think of a dual threat color commentator for football games, let us know. And I know what it sounds like, but we're not playing that game. We just went through the list, and they're all pocket passers.
Yeah, or one of these guys sneaky mobile, like the older guys sneaky mobile.
But they didn't make their money. They weren't making their money being a scrambler. Their job and their description was stand in that pocket and deliver the football, and you can move a little bit, as Sean said, because you're running for your life. RG3 was the one that was part of his game. It was to run the football. And, of course, his career didn't last the way it could have because at the time, I won't say it, the Washington football team at the time decided, you know what, now we're trying to win a playoff game. We know you can barely move, but we're going to throw you out there and run you out there while you're injured. And that kind of short-circuited his career.
Tebow does the SEC game day.
But he's not in the booth.
Not in the booth. But he does. He's close.
He's the closest we can have. If Tebow gets elevated to in-game analyst, then we have our true dual threat.
If Jordan Rodgers is sick one day, they can just elevate him.
That's just probably his brother praying on his downfall.
Could Jordan Rodgers move? I forgot.
No, not giving you Jordan Rodgers.
Okay,
he could move. He wasn't a statue. I mean, he's a worse, obviously, in every way, like version of his brother, except for the personality thing. I don't know if Jordan Rodgers had the same issues Aaron does off the football field, but Jordan Rodgers could move a little bit, but he wasn't as mobile as his brother. I don't remember him lighting it up at Vandy doing that stuff. It's just what it is. I don't know why. Dual threats don't make it into the booth. Trying to think of someone who is at the tail end of their career or just recently retired who could make that transition, who was a dual threat.
Cam Newton.
They could put Cam Newton in the booth, but they haven't yet. Now, he is now on ESPN. He's strictly an opinion guy right now. Will he become an analyst at some point? There's a chance.
Yeah. Maybe a side broadcast. He does like the camcast.
Possibly. I'm just waiting for the day. RG3 doesn't know he's a trailblazer, or maybe he thinks he is for a different reason. But as far as dual threat quarterbacks calling college football or NFL games, he is my trailblazer.
Yeah.
He's a guy I look at and go, I'm sure there's someone somewhere going, some random option quarterback from the 80s probably called games.
I was thinking, I was trying to think of old Nebraska quarterbacks or just someone that back when college teams ran the wishbone.
Did Eric Crouch ever make it into a booth?
I don't know. Not long enough for me to notice if he did.
I know he made the transition to safety. I think Eric Crouch did call games. That might be our guy. I know he tried to play safety at one point. That didn't work out for him for obvious reasons. But
I don't know why
he joined Fox College Football in 2013 as an in-game analyst. There it is.
Eric Crouch
found a dual threat guy beyond RG3, but we don't have any current guys, I believe.
No,
I'm looking for the next one. Mariota, pick it up, pack it up with the career.
I was gonna say I'm pretty sure he's a scout team or something.
I don't know if he's the emergency quarterback for the Commanders, but.
You actually might just be the backup there.
I think he's just second string. Hey, Mariota, you know what time it is.
Hey, you've quit on the team before.
He knows what time it is.
Left a season early.
Let's move it along. Well, let's get you in a booth.
Daniel's got this.
So Eric Crouch is the one. Him and RG3 are the guys we got to look to as the trailblazers for dual threat quarterbacks. We need another one. We need that. Because we got a monopoly of pocket passers calling games right now.
Yeah. A whole bunch of old stiffs.
So, literally. That's how they moved in a pocket.
Yeah. Todd Blackledge wasn't out there making moves.
Yeah. He was another guy who, if he moved, Paterno was going to yell at him for not running the play. Hey, just throw the ball to our fullbacks and cut it out. You see that tight end? Hit him. stop.
Hit him in the flat. Keep him moving.
What are we doing? Stop extending plays.
4 yards at a time. That's a first down.
Todd Blackledge. That dude won a national title, I think, thanks to Vinny Testaverde throwing picks in the Fiesta Bowl. But he did it from the pocket. We got one more segment to go before we wrap it up here. We have a Texan who won a weekly award for his tremendous play against the Patriots. We'll let you know who that is. And a couple other things we need to get to before we wrap it up. We will be back.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
Cleaning some things up from the previous segment. John Schaefer was the quarterback at Penn State on that night in Arizona when Vinny Testaverde lost his mind. Fran Tarkenton, we did not mention, as a scrambling quarterback who wound up in the booth. Few and far between, though. But let's throw him on there as a guy who may be the first scrambler who wound up doing in-game analysis alongside the play-by-play guy. Just wanted to get that out there. Okay. Will Anderson won defensive player, AFC Defensive Player of the Week for his 3-sack performance against the Patriots. And despite us joking about it, they did not grade on a curve because he's playing the Patriots. You got 3 sacks, you get the award. Congratulations to Will Anderson for dominating in that matchup. Danielle Hunter was productive as well. A good day overall for the defensive end duo. And they've pressured the quarterback throughout the year. They're both, I think, in that top 15 range for pressures. It just hadn't transitioned to a lot of sacks or materialized into a lot of sacks until Sunday. So they get that done. Congratulations to Will Anderson. It's an award that doesn't come with anything. I hope there isn't anyone who goes in there today and go, hey, Will, you see? What do you think winning Defensive Player of the Week? No player cares.
I mean, they probably ask that. Well, someone goes like,
someone does. I know.
Or they bring it up as congratulations on winning Defensive Player of the Week.
Should you congratulate?
What does it mean?
Congratulate players on accomplishments in the locker room? It's always a little awkward when I see that happening.
I think to do it as a way to ask a question. Yes.
Kind of lay the groundwork for you to ask the question.
Yes. So like, what was different? You know, congratulations on winning AFC. Or obviously you won AFC Player of the Week last week. What was the difference in Sunday's game versus the rest of the season?
The terrible Patriots tackles was the difference.
Yeah, it's like, I saw those bozos they had lining up in front of me.
And then they brought in some backups too. It was great to be out there. But he got it done. And they're going to need to do that. They always need to do that. That's their job. But particularly against Jordan Love, he has not handled pressure well. Some quarterbacks do, and it's the reason they don't get blitzed. But Jordan Love, and now the tweet has been deleted, but it was what he had done. The numbers aren't great for him against pressure. Not just blitzing. Just if you get guys in the face, if you qualify for a pressure, Jordan Love doesn't handle it. We're getting some people tweeting us about our dual threat conversation. Romo, scrambler. We decided we have to loosen up the qualifications because if we don't, then nobody gets in our scrambler / dual threat to in booth analyst conversation.
Basically, once you get past like Vic and Cunningham, once you go earlier than that, it's like, you're really limiting. Or maybe Steve Young, too.
Yeah, Steve Young.
And then once you get past that, like, no one was actually having designed runs for them.
No. So let's get – Romo's tough, but I
still don't think Romo
I don't want to put him in because he was more of evading pressure.
What was his career rushing yards?
Yeah, you can look that up. Mark Sanchez, no. Or he can pass and fumble. Dual threat, no. Well, no, that doesn't count. And I'm not going to honor RG3. As a trailblazer, but he's one of the guys. The Romo one, I'm in and out on that one. Just not sure. Sean's going to look up his rushing totals.
His career high for rushing in a season was the 2007 Dallas Cowboys season. Pretty good team. He had 129 yards.
No. He doesn't make the list.
31 carries, 129 yards, 4.2 per carry.
When did he stop playing football?
2015.
So he played in the era of Michael Vick. You don't get to be called a dual threat if you played in the era of Michael Vick and your highest rushing total is 120-something yards.
He only has three over 100. 3 years.
He was mobile. 100. I'll give you that.
He was mobile.
He can avoid pressure, but he was not a dual threat quarterback.
Yeah. I really, 2010, he only played six games. I forgot what injury it was that kept him out. And after that, it was 46, 49, 38, 61.
Yeah. As he got older, he became less and less a possibility to escape pressure and make people pay.
Okay. His career long rush, 21 yards.
No.
But that happened in 2014, his last full season as the starter.
He got the 21 out of fear. Sometimes fear is a motivator. And he goes, if I get hit, I am done for. That's the year? No, Dak wasn't there yet.
No, Dak was 16.
Yeah. So I appreciate the chiming in. But we can't give it to Tony Romo.
His longest rush every season, 16, 17, 15, 17, 14, 17, 15, 15, 21, 12. I do have to commend him for the consistency. Also, his first year as a starter, he had two carries for -2 yards. Longest rush was for -1.
He doesn't fit. He doesn't make it. We're loosening our qualifications.
Not that loose.
It's not that loose. We're not the Basketball Hall of Fame.
It loosens with time, like going backwards in time. He played in HD cameras. No.
Yeah.
This doesn't do it.
Yeah. Here's the pressure numbers for Love. Quarterback rating of 61.9 against pressure. Completion percentage of 39.8. Quarterback rating 107.4 against no pressure. A completion percentage of 66.7. So those numbers are drastic. Quarterbacks against no pressure, obviously going to be better. But he is drastically better. He is a MVP candidate without pressure, and he is a bum against pressure. So we know the Texans' goal, put pressure, get in the face of Jordan Love, and see how he handles it. He hasn't handled it well so far. We're done for the day. Gallant and George up next, followed by the Killer Bees. So if we're done, what does that mean?
We did it!
We did it. Will Anderson did it. Congratulations to him. What changed?
See those bumps?
See those bumps? That's what changed. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
By law, 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
The Sherwin-Williams summer sale is here. Get 30% off select paints and stains or 35% off our newest product, Emerald Symmetry, July 17th through the 27th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.